business.
Attorney Neal.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have several action items for the board this morning. The first item is a resolution for the election of officers. This resolution amends the bylaws regarding the election of the officers of the board. It makes three substantive changes. Number one, it changes the elections to annually with a simultaneous non-binding resolution pledging to elect the same person for another year term. Number two, it eliminates the first quarter of the year language from the bylaws. And number three, gives the board the option to elect replacements for departing chairs for one-year terms instead of for the remaining period of the term of the departing chair. So shall we have a vote on each one individually, Mr. Chairman?
Okay.
Okay. And if there are no questions, I'd ask that it matter be approved.
So moved.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Williams?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zala?
Yes.
Who seconded the motion?
Trustee Curtin seconded the motion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Second item is our annual election of the officers of the board. And at this time, Mr. Chairman, you could call for whether there are any nominations for chair for the current year.
Are there nominations for chair for the current year?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I would like to nominate Anthony Young, yourself, to serve as chairman of the board. I would also like to nominate James Joyce to serve as the vice chairman of the board, and he's presently serving. I would also like to nominate Michael Curtin to serve as secretary of the board, and he is presently serving in that seat now.
I second.
Would you second, so I'll just, is there a second for the office of chair? For Trustee Young?
In that I second that.
Okay. Is there a second for the office of vice chairman? That would be Trustee Joyce.
I second.
And is there a second for the office of secretary for Trustee Curtin?
I second.
All offices have been moved and properly seconded. Are there any further discussion? Or are there any further nominations to come before the board? Hearing none, Mr. Chairman, I think it's ready for a vote if you call for it.
We call for the vote.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Williams?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zottler?
Yes.
The officers are duly elected for another year term, Mr. Chairman. The third item on the list is for consideration is the approval of the executive session minutes prior to December 13th, 2013. This resolution approves the written minutes of the closed meetings held on June 28th, 2013 and September 20th, 2013, and also determines that the need for confidentiality still exists as to all of the written minutes of the closed meetings held on December 14th, 2012, March 8th, 2013, May 17th, 2013, June 28th, 2013, September 20th, 2013, and the special meeting of the Board of Trustees held on March 1st, 2013.
Do I hear a motion?
I make a motion, so moved.
I second that motion.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Williams?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zottler?
Yes.
Let's see. The next item is the approval of the executive session minutes prior to December 12th, 2014. This resolution approves the written minutes of the closed meetings held on June 27, 2014, August 22, 2014, and September 19, 2014, and determines the need for confidentiality still exists as to all of the written minutes of the closed meetings held on June 27, 2014, August 22, 2014, and September 19, 2014.
So moved.
I second the motion.
Trustee Carton?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Williams?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
Finally, Mr. Chairman, shall I address the resolution regarding the foundation?
Yes, you should, please.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, upon the referral from the legal department, there is a resolution to be considered by the board, which states as follows. Be it resolved that the Board of Trustees of Chicago State University, do you want me to read the entire resolution, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah. Yes, please.
Okay, I'll read the entire resolution. Resolution to invoke the 90-day notice of termination provision contained in the university's contract with Chicago State University Foundation. Whereas the current economic climate has forced the university to assume a significantly larger portion of its operating expenses, including student financial aid, and whereas given the reduction in state and federal financial aid, the university needs to provide additional support options to students, and whereas the economic climate has likewise forced the university to re-examine all of its contractual relationship, and whereas the examination has forced the university to conclude that it must restructure and realign a portion of its fundraising system, and whereas the university is thankful and appreciative of the foundation's efforts over the years in support of its mission to provide student scholarship and various other forms of financial support, and whereas fiscal realities demand that the university receive a more robust return in its investment dollar, and whereas the university has begun the process of establishing a new foundation and is exploring the development of a new foundation which will be more closely aligned with the needs of the university. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Trustees of Chicago State University does hereby direct that a 90-day notice to terminate its contract with the Chicago State University Foundation Board effective June 30th, 2015 be issued immediately. That the university president be directed to take immediate steps to establish a new foundation board with 501(c)(3) status immediately. That is the motion upon the referral from the law department.
Do I have a motion to approve?
I move to accept the resolution.
I second.
Trustee Carton?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Williams?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we did not do a decorum. Yeah, we passed over that. Item D in the action items, Mr. Chairman, is approval of the 2015 board meeting dates. Those proposed dates are as follows: March 6, 2015, March 8, 2015, June 26, 2015, September 18, 2015, and December 11, 2015.
Just so we're clear, what was the second date?
The second date was May 8th, 2015.
I move we accept the dates for the meetings for 2015.
Second.
Trustee Carton?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Williams?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
We have one other matter, Mr. Chairman, if you give me a second while I passed it. Okay. Yes, thank you. Item 5-1 on the agenda we passed over, and that is a second reading of an amendment to the bylaws. That amendment seeks to establish an amendment as it relates to the public comment session of the board meeting. And to help facilitate public comment, the bylaws will be amended to require that individuals wishing to appear before the board must sign up to speak 30 minutes before the start of the board meeting. The speakers will be limited to 10 individuals, and speakers will be limited to 2 minutes. This is the second reading, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
And the board should approve the second reading of it.
I so move.
I second.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Williams?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
That concludes my report, Mr. Chairman.
Are we ready for the President's report?
Yes, sir. First, let me congratulate you, Mr. Chair, for your continued tenure as the chair, and look forward to working with you in the shared vision to make Chicago State one of the best universities throughout the state of Illinois. I also like to congratulate the other officers of the board that had just recently been elected. It is a busy time of the year at CSU as we bring one semester to a close and prepare for a new academic year. Next week, CSU will celebrate our 355th commencement ceremony, where we will proudly graduate over 500 future leaders in education, business, healthcare, social work, and a variety of other fields. A number of developments have taken place since we last met. I know the board members are aware, but let me announce for the record, CSU officially has a new provost, Dr. Angela Henderson. She has worked. She has worked in higher education for the past 25 years, including being a member of the CSU family since 2009. She is a dedicated professional, and I believe she is the right person at the right time in the right place to help lead CSU in the right direction. Provost, congratulations, Dr. Henderson. I also want to recognize some other CSU administrators who have recently been promoted, and that is Dr. Leroy Jones. Dr. Leroy Jones is now the Dean of Arts and Sciences. He has a stellar tenure as a faculty member and coordinator of STEM for Chicago State University and throughout the state of Illinois. The other esteemed faculty member who has moved up to a deanship is Dr. Leslie Roundtree. Doc, once again, she has a very good tenure as a faculty member and chair of MOT, and has really served the university in a very strong way. And we are very pleased to have her leadership, her vision, and her integrity within that office. Thank you, Dr. Roundtree. I'd like to take a moment to recognize Dr. Renee Mitchell, Director of Human Resources in her department. And this is really a shout out to her department, the civil service employees in that department who have worked hard to bring about some absolute major changes within this university. The great work that they are doing is on a day-to-day people, individuals become used to it, but I just want to bring special attention to the fact that the HR department has brought Chicago State into the 21st century. Somebody's phone. Under Dr. Mitchell's leadership and her staff's leadership, 98% of CSU employees now receive direct deposit. 4 years ago, you would be standing in line for your check. You'd be waiting at the mailbox for your check. And it was, you know, the 19th century in terms of getting your paycheck. Today, 98%. The process redesign that has taken place with payroll and HR is just, it's commendable for the staff to, along with IT staff, to have made this take place. Secondly, all employees will have the ability now to receive an electronic W-2 form to make their tax filings. Once again, It was either something that was mailed to the house or something you had to stand in line to get. And it was February, sometimes March. I mean, whatever that deadline date, it was right up to that second. And we now have, you can go online and get it. Also, all employees are able to access their vacation and sick leave balances online now, as well as information they need on various insurance coverages. Some of you who work at other institutions or other organizations say, well, my God, what's so unusual about that? Well, Chicago State, you had to go to the Office of Human Resources, you had to go to and say, how many vacation days do I have? How many sick days do I have? You no longer have to do this. You can now go online. These aren't always the type of improvements we notice on a daily basis, but when the time comes, they truly help in making all of our lives a little easier. Dr. Mitchell, on behalf of the entire CSU family, civil service staff, on behalf of the entire CSU family, I want to thank you and your team for all the work that you have done to bring about these three major, major process redesigns within our university to make the quality of work at our university much better. Budget. Now I'd like to take a moment to address the very serious situation that the state of Illinois' budget is before us. Recently, we held a university-wide town hall meeting to communicate to the entire campus community the current economic situation in Illinois and how it may affect CSU. The town hall meeting was very well attended, and I'm happy to say students and staff were very engaged and several rose to ask excellent questions. It was a very, very well attended faculty staff town hall meeting, and everybody was very appreciative that we had it at the time when we had it, and they were very appreciative of the fact that we shared with them the information that we were able to share. The reality is that due to a number of issues, including the current state budget deficit, the expected rollback of Illinois income tax rate, and appellate court's recent ruling on pensions, all public universities have been advised by the Illinois Board of Higher Education to prepare for additional budget cuts in the next fiscal year. As of right now, CSU has been advised to prepare for a 10% cut and funding between now and July 1. More serious cuts could be possible next year. And to be honest, that more serious cut number that we are hearing is 20%. Recently, I met with all the presidents of public university in Illinois to coordinate a strategy that will emphasize the importance of funding for higher education and make the case to lawmakers that cuts to higher education will ultimately have a broad negative impact on the state of the economy. We remain hopeful that as the process moves forward, we can still prevent some or all of these cuts and eventually get to a point where the state is increasing its investment in public universities. For the moment, however, we've been told to prepare for cuts, and that's what we are doing. Possible effects of these cuts could mean travel reductions, staff layoffs, and that means administrators, civil service, faculty, temporary suspension of certain services, and a reduction in programs. All will be done in accordance with the appropriate rules, guidelines, regulations, and contract requirements if we are forced to do this. Moving forward, my team and I will work to keep the entire CSU family informed and, where appropriate, involved at each step of the process. These are difficult financial times in Illinois, but that does not change our responsibility and commitment to ensuring each of our students receives a quality educational experience. Enrollment. Our most up-to-date enrollment numbers are now available on our website. Like many universities, CSU has seen a decline in enrollment, and our enrollment management team is working to reverse that trend. Over the past several years, CSU has purposefully right-sized the enrollment of this university to put an emphasis on academic quality over quantity. Some of those decisions led to enrollment declines, but they also led to an overall improvement of academic quality at CSU, which is important for everyone who holds or soon will hold a degree from our university. It is also important to note the changes in federal financial aid as well as decreasing opportunities for scholarships has hurt the enrollment of CSU and universities throughout the nation. As I have often said, CSU students are academically challenged. They are not academically challenged. They are financially challenged. That being said, we continue to enact creative and aggressive recruitment strategies. Some of these efforts are working to increase scholarship opportunities, creating and enhancing new education partnerships, increasing our involvement in local high school mentoring, going to Fenwick High School. Going to Fenwick High School. And starting a concept called Each One, Bring One. Dual enrollment, expanding international programs and partnerships. Auditing, I want to briefly mention that my leadership team and I recently appeared before the Legislation Audit Commission in Springfield to discuss the most recent audit. I'm happy to report that the lawmakers were universally complimentary of CSU for our combined efforts to reduce audit findings and instill a culture of accountability and compliance. Compliance takes everyone rowing in the same direction, and I want to take a moment to publicly thank the entire CSU family for their efforts in strengthening our compliance. With that, I want to wish the board members and all CSU family a very happy and safe holiday season. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. President. Any questions or comments for the President? Hearing none, we'll proceed to our reports. The first report will be Academic and Student Affairs. Trustee Joyce.
We're going to hear from Provost Dr. Angela Henderson, her report.
Okay. Thank you, Trustee Joyce. Mr. Chairman, President, trustees, staff, and guests. This semester has been very productive for the Division of Academic Affairs, as evidenced by the number of presentations, publications, and research completed by faculty, staff, and students this semester. In the interest of communications, university governance, transparency, the President and I continue to visit departments weekly to listen and share information about the university. Some departments visited to date include all of the departments in the College of Business, Criminal Justice, Philosophy, Political Science, and International Studies. I also meet every week with the academic deans and the academic leadership team to continue to ensure that our academic vision is moving forward and we are addressing academic issues on behalf of the university. We have focused on providing quality academic programs, the retention of students, budget efficiency, deans learning development so that we can do more fundraising in our colleges, as well as starting to establish more advisory committees for each college. Currently, one of our highest priorities over this next Christmas break is that some of our buildings will be closing so that we can install new electrical switch gears. So our academic deans, our faculty and staff have been very accommodating as we have planned to close the College of Education, the College of Health Science and Business, as well as the Harold Washington building so that we can install the new switch gears in preparation for the new semester. So currently today is the last day. The buildings are closing. We have everyone moving out, but it seems to be working well. We're working together, and the buildings will be open on January 12th when the semester starts. The College of Arts and Science Search Committee completed the search for the new Dean of Arts and Sciences, so the President has already shared with you the selection. Dr. Leroy Jones is our new Dean of Arts and Sciences. We did invite three candidates to campus to present to the entire campus, and they spent the full day with us. Dr. Jones is the selected candidate. We are very excited to have his leadership in the College of Arts and Sciences. I do want to formally say that he is homesick with a very bad cold. So he sends his regrets. Our general counsel, Patrick Cage, as well as a negotiating team, including academic personnel, in collaboration with Dr. Lori Walters on behalf of Local 4100, are currently negotiating our next 4100 faculty and includes some staff next contract. We will keep you posted on that, the progress, but I did want you to know that we are currently in negotiations. Trustee Curtin, Dr. Bernard Rowan, and I had a productive meeting at Fenwick High School in River Forest. We met with the principal and counselors to discuss establishing a new relationship between our two institutions. We currently have one student from Fenwick who's interested in nursing and who is at the university, and we look forward to recruiting more. I'd like to thank Trustee Curtin for helping us to establish this partnership, and we want you to know that we are committed to expanding not only in the Fenwick area, but working with the community colleges and other high schools in that area. Also, the deans, associate deans, and chairs have committed to visiting community colleges, high schools, and other strategic partners at least once a week as we do our jobs throughout the semester. Did you want to say anything about
it? No. I mean, just to say thank you to you and Dr. Rowan for making me look relatively good over there, even though I don't need to be. I'm retired. It was a terrific presentation by Dr. Rowan and Dr. Henderson. It made me proud to be a graduate of this school and a trustee on this board. So I thank you for it. And I think there is some real value in that relationship, and we need to build it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you again for your support. And our next step in that area will be inviting the principal and the counselors out to meet with the president and other leaders at the university. Some other quick highlights. Some other quick highlights include that we did seek the bid for the Obama Library under the chairmanship of Dean Richard Darga in the Library and Instructional Services, as well as under the leadership of President Watson. We had many faculty, staff, and community members who believed that CSU was the place for the library. We didn't make the top four, but I'm happy to report that another university has reached out to us, one of the top four candidates, and they have asked us to play a role in their bid for the Obama Library site. So we have submitted programming to this university. We've made some recommendations, and we are hopeful that some of that programming will be expanded to Chicago State University. The Academic Affairs Leadership Team met with our Faculty Senate's Executive Committee on December 4th, 2014 to discuss the proposed amendments to their 2011 Constitution and bylaws. We spent approximately maybe an hour and a half having a very productive discussion, and we are scheduling our next monthly meetings for the rest of the academic year so that we can continue to be open and transparent. I will also will also be attending the Faculty Senate's monthly meetings in accordance with the Constitution and bylaws so that we can establish a more positive open communication channel. On Tuesday, December 9th, 2014, the College of Arts and Sciences and CSU's Urban Solutions Department sponsored an internal and community forum on the incidents that have occurred recently in Ferguson, St. Louis, and in New York. Our faculty and staff and students participated on a panel to express their thoughts, their feelings, and provide solutions from an academic perspective. My president provided opening remarks. This event was well attended and received, and we hope that we continue to address issues national as well as international issues on campus from an academic perspective so that we can come up with solutions and inform the public of some of these solutions. And then finally, we are working on completing the design, operations, and programming for the University Child Care Center. So we have the posters in front of you. As you can see, it's very exciting to see this building, and it's been a long time for our students to have requested this building, and we believe that we will be complete sometime in 2016. The designs are to the right, and I really wanted to talk to you about the College of Education's dean and faculty are working on the operations, the programming, the staff for the building. We anticipate to serve infants, toddlers, preschoolers, and have an after-school program. We're planning to house approximately 105 students, and in the building we will have playrooms, we have playgrounds, a library, and computer lab. So there's a lot to do in this next year and a half to not only build the building, but to start looking at the cost of operations and the type of our staff, and also integrating the child care center into our academic programs. We have an early childhood program, we have a recreation program, we have many programs housed in the College of Education who can impact the operations of this child care center. Are there any questions about the center or the design? Nope. Okay. All right. With that said, I am going to ask Dr. Paul Musio to come up and discuss our PME steering committee and report. And then after him, Dr. Miriam Mobley-Smith will talk about our Walgreens contract. She's the Dean of Pharmacy. And then Dr. Rich Darga will discuss briefly our open access requirement and report that's due to you on December 30th based on state law.
Excuse me, Madam Provost, before you do, and maybe I can hold my comments until Dr. Darga comes, but you spoke a little bit about the presidential library search, and I'm going to call it a contest of sorts. And you gave it, a few words, but I would like to just take a minute to say that called for a Herculean effort on everyone's part here at the university. And I saw a work product that was over the top. And I met with the committee, the search committee members, and several of them said to me in passing that our effort was the best that they had seen out of all the efforts submitted, that our work product was the best, that it was the most genuine, the most sincere, and the most well presented. So I, for one, would like to say thank you to all of those who put their time, effort, soul, hearts into this. And I believe that that's why we've been asked to join the others as they move forward. My own supposition as to why we were not among those in the end to be selected, aside from extreme politics, is that it is so costly. The cost is for us almost prohibitive. And that would be the only reason why CSU was not selected. I, if I were wearing a hat, I would tip my hat to you, sir, and to you, Madam Provost, and to everyone else who participated in this. I want to thank you, Dr. Watson, Mr. Chairman, everyone who had something to do with this. We showed the President of the United States and everyone else what a fabulous institution this is. We showed them, in fact, so much that the president himself came to the institution. So thank you all.
And thank you. And I do appreciate you being there when we did our presentation this summer. And I do want to just mention quickly that it was a large group of individuals that included faculty, staff, students, and the greater CSU community. We had participation intensive in Pullman and Roseland and Chesterfield and everywhere. The passion was phenomenal. And as a matter of fact, they're still calling me.
It was amazing.
And so we're going to pull the committee back together in January, and we're going to be talking about how we can help continue to foster this relationship as opportunities grow and develop with other schools. So, and I appreciate your kind words.
Well, it certainly put you on the map with me, sir. Thank you so much.
When we got the phone call,
yeah.
When we got the phone call about 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, from the University of Chicago.
That's right.
They were very specific, and it pretty much supports what Trustee Zoller is saying. You know, one, let me say, Darga, without a doubt, thank you. It would not have happened without your leadership, and I really want to thank you. Second, Trustee Zoller, when they called, the University of Chicago called, they specifically said, we'd like for you to be one of our stakeholders, we'd like to for you in some way to be involved in our library, et cetera, et cetera. And we understand you have an aquaponics program. And we understand that you have and then they started naming various aspects of our proposal. All right? Which is supporting what you're saying.
That they took that proposal.
Yeah.
You know, so.
We saw that all along.
You know, so there were, you know, we maybe had 7 or 6 aspects. They asked for 2 or 3 of them, three of them. And so we're submitting that to see how we can make that part of the University of Chicago. But it really speaks to, one, what the committee did, and supports what you're saying, Trustee. Without a doubt, this committee put together a final report that no other report stood next to. You guys were excellent.
Thank you.
Okay, just really quick, Provost asked me just to give a quick update on the open access report that was required under Senate Bill 1900. We have completed the report, and we have completed an implementation plan draft, and we have completed a draft policy for open access here on campus. We've engaged the faculty senate throughout the year, and we will continue to do so next year as we work to implement the open access policy. The report will be submitted at the end of next week. I'm just waiting to get the committee members to complete their input on the final draft, and it goes to Farah to be distributed to the appropriate legislative bodies that do want to see the report. I reviewed a couple of the other college reports, including Northern Illinois report, and it is ours is comparable to what the other schools are submitting with respect to open access. Open access is just a publishing issue with respect to making sure, you probably know, that making sure that the research that is produced on campus is published in a fashion that is accessible to scholars around the world. All right.
Thank you, Dean Darger.
Dr. Paul Musio.
Thank you, Dr. Henderson and board members. In your booklet, I'll be referencing this document, so if you want to just follow along. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak before you today. Dr. Bernie Rowan is actually our leader and is on the agenda, but he's on an NCAA trip. He's our FAR faculty athletic representative, and so he couldn't join us today. But I am joined by Dr. Latrice Eggleston and Dr. Val Goth, if you could just acknowledge, and Liz Osika. Dr. Liz Osika couldn't join us today, but we are the PME Steering Committee. I want to just take a couple of minutes to give you a brief history of PME, our purpose, what we've accomplished, and what we hope to accomplish. Preparing for the 2012 HLC visit, self-study revealed that there was no formal systematic assessment of non-academic units or of program outcomes for academic units. And through visits with consultants and a lot of self-searching, PME was developed to fill this gap. I'm just going to read a little bit so I don't make any mistakes. The purpose of planning measurement, oh, by the way, what does PME stand for? Some people make up some things, but it's planning, measurement, and effectiveness. I like to add a few prepositions. It's planning and measurement for effectiveness. So that's why we do it. PME is to implement the strategic plan through an annual planning process, which includes updating unit missions, goals, and objectives, learning and program outcomes, assessment and evaluations, and to establish priorities tied to budgeting for these activities. PME working groups are the steering committee, who I've just introduced, and the PME facilitators. Are there any PME facilitators, if you could raise your hands, PME facilitators in the audience here. The PME, this is shy. I'll talk about the PME facilitators in just a minute, but the steering committee meets regularly to do several things. We identify with the university administration what the university priorities are for the given fiscal year, and we meet with the PME facilitators regularly. Certainly every August, and we have a big meeting with all of them, and then in the second spring semester, we meet with smaller groups individually to do more hands-on, one-on-one training. The eventual goal of every year is that every unit, there are over 100 units and 100 PME facilitators, each one of those units is to produce a PME plan, and that is also in your packet. The PME plan, the last one was due September 30th, 2014, is for fiscal 16 and 17, and that is specifically to include a new budget request for fiscal 16 and capital request for fiscal 17. So that means that there's actually a three-year window in the sense that there's short-term planning as well as long-term planning taking place in the PME process. But right under the goals and objectives is the learning and program outcomes. We all have learning and program outcomes. Even the PME steering committee has learning outcomes. We teach ourselves, we teach our constituents, we teach our students and other faculty and employees various things. And so we also have learning outcomes. And that's something that our consultants recommended that we always embed into the planning process. What are our learning outcomes? I remember, Dr. Watson, you mentioned that even the janitors, right? Everybody contributes to the learning process. How do we contribute to the learning process? What do people learn as a result of what we do, no matter what we do? And then, what's the point of planning if you don't assess the effectiveness of your plans? And so right there in the bottom of the unit plan is assessment and evaluation instruments and criteria. That's really what we do as a steering committee. We look at these and we make sure that if you've got goals and objectives, are you assessing them? How are you going to assess them? And then that's our goal for this year, is to start reviewing these assessments. It's a lot of work, but it's actually a lot of fun too, because you get to learn a lot about the university. Some really positive things have come already out of PME. Dr. Seeker reports that the ALA, the American Library Association, has already, we're trying to get the accreditation from that, and they've already given kudos to the Library Department for the PME, because it showed that we have, not only do we plan, but that we have benchmarks, and we assess to see the extent to which those benchmarks are met, and that was always a concern, and now is a strength for CSU. We've tied the PME plans to strategic goals, in particular communications and ERG enrollment, retention and graduation were concerns that were raised by the 2012 visit, visiting team of the HLC. And so we wanted to make sure that the PME had specific ties to those goals. And every PME plan does have specific ties to how they're going to address those goals. We're going to try in the future to have more touches with 100, PME facilitators. It's relatively difficult to meet all of them one-on-one, but those that ask, we go out and meet with them, and we help to train them to help to write that plan. Once they've written one, then they go through the cycle, and it's easier for them to write another one, and they get better and better over time. Right now, all the plans are housed in live text. Live text is a really good way of storing these things so that all the appropriate people have access to them. So our accomplishments is that there are 100 PME facilitators and 100 PME plans. But our goal is that now we can continue the cycle and we work on the actual assessment, the assessments of these plans. And then to complete this, the assessment cycle, how do you make your next plan be based on the information that you've learned from your assessments? So that's where we are with PME. We're hoping that you know, anything that we produce will be made available to you as you request it. And I'll be happy to take any questions, and hopefully my colleagues will be able to answer some of them.
Any questions from the board members?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Musial.
Thank you to the entire PME committee. Our next informational report is Dean Miriam Mobley Smith.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It gives me great pleasure to be here today to update you on a wonderful component in the growth trajectory for the College of Pharmacy. As you well know, we admitted our first class in August of 2008. In the process of this, there are several components to ensure that the program is growing the way that it needs to for continued success. Certainly, programmatically and from a curricular perspective, those pieces go without saying. From a physical facilities and logistics perspective, know that if you don't have the facilities to be able to educate the student, and contemporary facilities so that you can match, if not exceed, those facilities of your peers, then you have a problem in a number of different ways, including competitiveness and so on. And so in order to start the program and to continue its initial growth, there were several funding streams that were utilized at that time, one of which was a commitment from the Walgreens Corporation, in fact, the largest donation or grant that was given for the growth of the College of Pharmacy that was private, of $1 million. Now, that $1 million went to development of the program in any different way that was needed. That would include physical facilities, that would include programmatic issues, that would include hiring. So anything that was needed by the college for that $1 million would support was actually then utilized. Now, needless to say, in any grant agreement, there is an agreement and provisions. Now, this occurred back in 2006, so it actually predates me. But out of respect for the current board, so that we could bring you up to date on what the provisions were at that time and how they reach now into 2014, 2015, when we anticipate the final component of the renovation for the College of Pharmacy will be completed. That would be in the summertime of 2015. I bring to your attention component number or provision number 4. The gift will be used as follows: to fund program development and recruitment initiatives. The parties agree that in recognition of and the university's reliance on the donor support of $1 million and the relationship with the university, a lecture hall will be named and known as the Walgreens Lecture Hall. The Walgreens Lecture Hall will be designated as such by appropriately designed and placed signage with approval by the donor. The donor grants the university full and complete rights to use the name so selected by the donor for all purposes related to the College of Pharmacy and Chicago State University. The parties agree, provision 5, that this naming is contingent on and subject to prior approval by the executive committee of the university's Board of Trustees. Needless to say, when this agreement was signed, on the 16th of January in 2007 by Walgreens and Chicago State University Foundation, all of those provisions were agreed upon at that time. I'm bringing them forward now at the end of 2014 as we near the completion of the final component of the renovation for the College of Pharmacy. For your knowledge, for your information, so that you will know that we will be fulfilling the requirements of this particular agreement.
When will we fulfill that requirement?
As soon as the completion of the renovation is over. And I've been working with Walgreens already in terms of them getting their powers to be together for an official ribbon cutting and a presentation of the plaque outside of the very, very complete lecture hall that will be named for them. The plans are tremendous. If you ever have a chance to come over to the Douglas Hall, we have renderings up outside the college, and we're very, very excited.
What about the CVS Caremark hallway or washrooms? Or would that be coming soon?
No, not washroom. The CVS Student Center and Technology Laboratory. There will be a ribbon cutting on that. Needless to say, that's more recent in terms of board approval of the naming. And so the order of the space naming, Walgreens first, CVS next, and then a big ribbon cutting for the entire third floor, which we are also launching I'll call it a community builder, but also a fundraising building project, where we will have pharmacy antiquity pictures throughout the entire college with naming opportunities. Anyone who's interested, faculty, staff, students, alumni, family of alumni, and so on, will have the opportunity to adopt these pictures at a gold, silver, and platinum level, and to keep this all running. So that will happen at that third phase.
Excellent.
Okay. Other questions?
Yes, Doctor. All of that's great, and at the risk of sounding greedy, do we continue to have a relationship with Walgreens where they might continue to support your program financially?
I can't say on the record at this point, but if you look at my smile, yes.
By the way, you also have done an excellent, excellent job, and that program has reverberated around the state. I happen to have been in a class with a number of women CEOs and directors, and one was from Walgreens, and she and I had quite a discussion about this.
That's great to know. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd also like to share that Dean Mobley Smith was the pharmacist of the year last year for the state of Illinois.
Really? Thank you. Little did I know.
Yes. Are there any other questions?
Any more questions from the board?
Thank you.
Thank you.
If not, that concludes our report, and happy holidays.
It does not. You have a resolution.
I didn't know. Do you want to do the resolution as a part of this? So Academic Affairs has a resolution, and I'll ask Dean Canis to join me, Dr. Dave Canis. Dr. Canis has written a grant, and we have received a grant for a school and campus safety award from the Illinois Emergency Management Agency, IEMA. We received $51,800 to implement this project, and we will use the money to install new security doors in all three entrances to the education building. Each entrance will be outfitted with proximity card readers, and we are hoping that this is a pilot for all of the buildings on campus as we look to improving campus safety. And we're asking for the board's approval to accept the funds so that we can implement this project.
Is there a motion?
So move.
Second.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Williams?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
Motion is accepted. Thank you, Dean Cannon.
Thank you, Dean Cannon.
Thank you, Provost. This concludes the report of the Academic Affairs Committee.
Our next report will be Finance and Audit. Trustee Zoller?
Mr. Pinkham? We're not done with Enrollment Management and Student Affairs. Still reports under Academic.
Oh, sorry.
If you still want to have the report.
Good morning, Chairman Young, Trustee Joyce, and members of the CSU Board. For the record, my name is Cherise Sidney. I'm the Associate Vice President of Enrollment Management, and with me is Dr. Latrice Eggleston, our Director of Institutional Effectiveness and Research. In the ever-changing landscape and challenges that many of the schools are facing regarding budgets and enrollment, Chicago State University is looking for outside-of-the-box ways to create new partnerships, campaigns, and programs to build our university exposure, student enrollment, and enhanced services, and community engagement. As such, we are currently launching a variety of campaigns or partnerships that target a more diverse student population. Some of those campaigns or programs are CHEG. CHEG is an external vendor that will enhance our institution's outreach and recruitment efforts through electronic high school recruitment, where students are searching us out. Traditional freshmen are using new electronic mediums to search for the right college. This tool puts us in the playing field. Currently, 4,500 students have reached out and want to know more about CSU. Link Unlimited is a program, again, outside of the box. It's a non-traditional entity that we're looking to connect with. They currently partner with high-achieving high school students. We are looking to become one of their university partners. They currently have partnerships with UIC, University of Chicago. We think that we should be in the playing field, and so we are meeting to, again, engage their student population to become part of CSU's family. Each One, Bring One is an internal campaign that challenges the CSU community to help us with our enrollment, to grow our student population. Part of that campaign is actually student initiated. There was our student Darius, who's our SGA president, actually brought to the table and said, if we do this, can you create an initiative for students to bring students to the campus? So we took that concept and we built on it. We expanded it to the employee base as well as to the student base, and so we're running that campaign right now. Senior Saturday, another initiative that we're doing currently. All state universities have a program where senior citizens receive free tuition. We are taking advantage of that program and we're reaching out to our seniors this Saturday just to tell them about the program. Saturday's program will give those seniors a taste of CSU. They'll be able to do senior size, Zumba, they'll take financial planning courses, all just to engage them to learn more about who we are and what we have to offer. Finish What You Start is another campaign. That campaign specifically targets students who have incomplete applications, as well as students who may have stopped out and need to come back to graduate. So that campaign has several different components. Again, there's more information in the board report, but we've been busy. In addition to that, we posted the CPS principals this past, I believe, October, and we had approximately 50 to 75 principals and advisors here. We're meeting, Provost stated that she and her team are meeting with community colleges. Well, the enrollment management team is also meeting with those community college partners, and we're doing a 1-2 punch, if you will. Enrollment management is discussing dual enrollment partnerships and transfer articulation agreements. provost's area, academic affairs, are talking about program-to-program articulation agreements. So we're connecting and partnering with community colleges from a dimensional perspective. Again, those are just some of the few partnerships and campaigns that we've been a part of. Dean Muscadin will talk about other student initiatives regarding enrollment and partnerships. Chicago State is also growing as a venue of choice in the Chicagoland area. We have had the honor of hosting several major events, of which many of you know about, to not only build revenue for the university, but to also create national exposure. Sunday, October 19th, we hosted President Obama, which drew over 6,200 community members, Chicagoland members, to the campus. This Sunday, December 13th, we will be hosting a tennis exhibition match between the number one ranked tennis player and Chicago's own Taylor Townsend. January 23rd, for the third time, we will be hosting Steve Harvey's annual mentoring camp. So again, we are doing things, thinking outside the box to create that exposure for CSU to grow our student body. We are currently in our spring enrollment period, and so Dr. Latrice Eggleston will talk to you about the numbers at this point in time and our continued movement.
Good morning, trustees, trustee chairman Young. Currently, enrollment registration started for the spring term, November 17th. We're 1 month into the enrollment period, and we have another month remaining. We are currently at 51% of where our census data was last year. That basically is at the number of 2,734 students are currently registered. The census last year was at 5,297 students. So we're 51% of that number currently. Some of the highlights are that we're actually 15% up in new admits compared to where we were last year at the same time. In addition, we are really, as Associate Vice President Sydney said, we're really pushing to increase our enrollment. We're pushing to make sure that our enrollment is, we're currently for the fall semester at 55,211 students. We're hoping to reach that enrollment in the spring or higher. So that is the goal for enrollment management, and we're pushing to make sure we can reach those numbers in the spring.
I guess my question is, I know enrollment has gone down every year since I've been on this board, and I think every year since this administration has been in place. And do you have an idea of when enrollment will stop declining?
So there are several factors of why enrollment has continued to decrease that are both external and internal to the university. Some of the external factors are based on,
and I don't mean to cut you off, Doctor,
I'm sorry.
But we've heard the reasons why enrollment declines. And I'm not asking you why it's gone down. I'm just saying, with all the work you're doing and the planning you're doing, can you see a day when the enrollment stops declining? And how far away is that?
I would say yes. We do see that day. And I think it's not just one answer. It's a dimensional answer, because there are processes and efficiencies that we're putting into place now. We're enhancing our communication plans. We're reaching out to students a lot sooner, a lot earlier now. And we're also doing a collaborative approach to that. So if we can, and our plan is to, engage that student and connect and build that relationship with that student sooner, again, from a dimensional perspective, from a student-to-student perspective, from a dean-to-student perspective, then I believe with the interest of the applications, the Chegg Research, Common App, we've received more applications at this point in time last year than we ever have in our university history. Again, using more technology, more efficiencies, and enhanced communications, I strongly believe that our enrollment numbers will start to go up, especially for our new student enrollment.
Good morning, board. I don't think this is. Hello, no. Good morning, board members and Mr. President. I'm Paula Carney, Assistant Provost for Graduate and Professional Studies. And at the graduate level, we're doing a number of initiatives. And first is to have a systematic approach for reaching out to students and developing a relationship. In enrollment management terms, it's called the admissions funnel. And previously, these connections with students really weren't made until the application time. We just licensed a webinar software package, and we're going to be doing virtual webinars to reach students in their homes. As opposed, you know, other programs are doing live webinars. I've presented to the Graduate Council some policy changes because there's a lot of conversations on campus about dual programs. Someone may be interested in getting an MPH and an MSW, for example. We're coming forth with a couple of new graduate program proposals next semester. And we are also looking at some other integrated undergraduate graduate programs. So we're considering some policy changes that will let us to do that. Lastly, we're looking at some building on some of the innovations we've done in international programs so that we can attract more international students, undergraduate as well as graduate.
And just to add to what Dr. Carney is saying, just to put the numbers behind her efforts, currently graduate enrollment is up. The new student enrollment is up by 29%. Again, that's different, a lot different than what we've seen in the past. And for unduplicated totals, her enrollment is up for graduate programs by 26%. Again, those are great increases. So we are seeing some results from the enhanced communications and outreaches to our students.
Do you expect the spring enrollment for this year to be equal to the spring enrollment from last year?
We are trying. We are putting all of our efforts into it. There are factors that we can't control, but everything that we can control, we are ensuring that we have the financial resources available as much as we can to help our students. So we are using inventive ways to help our students. The EAF fund is one of them. We have a high population of students, especially seniors, who have exhausted their funds. So we're taking dollars from paying students, and we're using a percentage of those dollars to help those students who meet the GPA requirements, who are close to graduation, to stay in school. We're looking at different and various ways of using the scholarship dollars from the 1.6, so it doesn't all go to just our new student pool, but we're looking to see what's remaining so that we can help other students. We're looking at sweat equity programs, where students who have real jobs on campus, we're saying to them, okay, we'll work out a program where those dollars go to pay your tuition and you can still continue your education. We are looking at everything at our disposal to ensure that those numbers are met.
Do you think that we're losing students to these I'll call them sort of certificate mill programs, the private colleges that are just popping open every day that are saying, come here and within 6 to 8 months you'll have a certificate and you'll be able to go to work at this hospital or the next hospital, that type of thing?
I believe there's a combination of why we're losing some of our students. Traditionally, students at Chicago State University stop in and stop out. So they will attend one semester, say the fall term, but they won't return in the spring, and then they'll return back in the next fall term. And so that's the challenge that we're having with some of our students. So we're trying to work with the provost area, academic affairs with the deans and the faculty to work with the students in terms of encouraging them to come back, even if the number of courses that they traditionally take are not as many that they would take in the fall, but we're trying to do everything we can to ensure that the students actually return back to CSU. And that includes our first-time, full-time freshmen.
And Trustee Zoller, anecdotally, we believe we probably are losing some of the students to the for-profits or the private institutions who encourage students to take out loans very quickly, and students often get the money up front and they attempt to get into a program, and it's usually for a short-term job and not a career. Right. But our data shows that students are saying that they don't return. We lose about 870 on average between the fall and the spring, and students are saying they're not returning for academic reasons and financial, and then there's this other category, but those are the two primary categories. And so I wanted to share with the trustees that over the last 3 years, when we look at our new student enrollment and we look at retention, right before school starts, our numbers show that we have students here and they are ready to be enrolled. We typically have this list that ranges from 600 to 1,000 students who can't pay. And so we go round and around, we meet with the deans, we really try to spread resources to help students to be able to pay their down payment, because they get accepted, they're academically prepared, they select their classes, sometimes they are sitting in their classes, and then we drop them because we haven't had a payment. And so we're really looking at that, because it's hard if you've come to Chicago State, you're living in a dorm, you are planning to attend, and your financial aid process doesn't work out, or you can't come up with the money to pay the bill. So this fall alone, the list I shared with the deans, the list ranged, it was up to 1,300 when school was starting. It went down to 600. We dropped 600 students. We were able to get about 300 students back in, and we have over 200 students who weren't able to return or to continue to go to school because they couldn't pay. From the academic side, we've just ramped up tutoring, and so we sent out letters to students asking them to please go see a tutor if you have an early warning system, and they receive warnings every 4 weeks. Currently, it's not mandatory for all faculty, and so some faculty use it and some don't. But students are able to see if they're missing assignments, if they are missing class, if they are failing the class. They have codes, and they receive notification on the 4th, the 8th, and the 12th week. And so we asked deans and chairs this year to look at that list, to send out letters, to in some ways to say you are mandated to go to tutoring because we see that you're on a trajectory of not passing this course or later courses. So we've been working together from the student side, the enrollment side, and the academic side to really wrap our arms around students to figure out, you know, what's preventing them from continuing going to school from semester to semester. So we can't continue to bring them in and lose over 800 students between the fall and the spring semester. So
we appreciate your efforts. I also appreciate the fact that we are now looking, as are many institutions, at the international student.
Yes.
I think that's very important, and I think as we go into the future, that will be a large avenue for us.
As we disaggregate the numbers, and Larry may want to address it, but there was a time when we were not dropping students because they owed money. And that sent our accounts receivable up, which then gave us audit findings. And what we've done is, because of that, we had to put into place a system where we said, guess what, we have to drop it. Mm-hmm. And if we drop 236, that's a number.
5% of our enrollment.
It was 1,300 when we started.
But you worked to keep those.
We worked to get that down, but there was a time when we would not even drop them. So the enrollment would stay up. But then we have problems where the federal government says, not the federal, it's not a federal issue, it's
the
another
state.
Kind of
state.
Issue. Right. Where we now have students in terms of accounts payable. Other universities will have students who they allow to go through and they don't drop. But they are of a different economic status. Our students are the lowest economic quartile. And if you're in the mid economic quartile, you know, your parents can bounce back. They can say, okay, I'm gonna loan you the money, you go ahead and finish and pay off your bill. Our students don't have that situation where somebody's gonna pick up and pay off their bill at the end. So, you know, it's almost like a perfect storm.
Right.
Our mission is our mission. We accept our mission. We believe in our mission. We're not going to change our mission. We are here to help those students that have the challenges that they have financially. But we also must accept those challenges to come with it. We are going to, you know, our enrollment is going to stabilize. Bottom line to the chairman's question, our enrollment is going to stabilize. Enrollment is not a science. As much as people would like to think that it is not a science. If it was, you would see someone going, you know, it is a combination of an art and it's the reality of life. It's the reality of life. We expect our enrollment to level out right around 5,000, whether it's 5,200, but right around 5,000. And then we hope, it's a hope with strategic planning, it's a hope with strategies in place, and goals and metrics and accountability behind it for our enrollment to grow incrementally. And then the question is, if you were to ask me, I don't want to see our enrollment grow beyond a certain point, but go beyond 6,200, 7,000. I don't want to see that. We're not prepared for that. That is a whole different kind of institution. So, in answer to your question, sir, you know, we expect for it to be stabilizing, a period of stabilization, then a period of incremental growth. That stabilization should be taking place this coming semester, meaning this spring semester.
Any other questions?
Provost?
Sorry, I just want to share also, we have so many great projects that are coming to the campus that we believe it will be attractive to our community and new students. The Child Care Center is expected 2016. Our West Campus expansion is moving, and we hope that we are able to expand on the West Side. That will be good for us. In addition to that, we talked about the pharmacy renovation. That has taken some time, and some new pharmacy programs have opened up, and they have just new sites, new buildings, and it has become competitive. And so we believe this renovation will allow us to continue to attract the best and the brightest. And then finally, we have the virtual hospital that Dean Roundtree and Dean Mobley-Smith are working on. And so for our health science building, we will have all of our health programs in one building, and we anticipate it would look like a virtual hospital. And so students are attracted to new and bright and technology and good things. So we're focusing on providing those services. And then if the Robinson building opens, that will be our one-stop center. We've already designed the inside. And so on the outside is being worked on right now. And if we get the funding for that, then our students will go one place to get enrolled, advised, and serviced. And we believe it will cut down on the our students running around the campus, not being able to get advised and serviced in a timely manner.